Need to go. Rhetorical question. How many of you here have used BizTalk Server or planning to use BizTalk for? Okay. Anybody here using it as a B2B engine for EDI kind of scenarios? Surprising. So most of the others use here it like a ESB or an orchestration, I guess, right? Okay. All right. We're good to go already?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. So a quick introduction. Can everybody hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. So a quick introduction. So my name is Guru Venkatraman. I am a program manager with BizTalk Server and Services. So I've been with the product since 99. That's when we first planned for the product. So over a period of time, the product has evolved, and we'll be talking about what's coming up next and those kind of stuff. Today I have with me Sam Benach. He is one of our partners and MVPs. They run Codit, which is a development company based out of Belgium. Today I wanted to take a slight change from the published agenda in a way that rather than talking about it in abstract, I wanted to present to you a case study of what hybrid integration really means. In the original agenda that we published, we said, okay, let's talk about what hybrid integration is. But instead, then we thought further about it and say, like, okay, let's actually present a case study wherein we did a real migration, and it is actually a work in progress, so that we can talk to you about what does it take to do a real migration, and what does hybrid integration really means. It's not really about migration, it's about hybrid integration. So if you don't mind, I can talk about that case study. The reason behind that is it's a case study that involves Microsoft IT. It's one of the world's largest IT, so it's lots of challenges involved in that. We will talk about that in depth, and that will also give you an insight into how you should be thinking about it based on a workload perspective rather than thinking about it as a migration project. So you can see the value of should I be doing hybrid integration or not, and how valuable is it for me in a given scenario. So we will talk about a particular scenario where Microsoft thought about it, because Microsoft itself has a very large IT shop. So how we thought about it. So in this particular case, I was directly responsible for it from the product team. So I worked very closely in actually doing that integration side of it. So I can talk to you both from the product side as well as from the solution side. So feel free to ask any questions that you may have as we progress through this. So for now, let us go through some context setting on, so I think these are standard slides that I can move through. Okay. So what we will be covering today is what is hybrid integration and a quick overview of what BizTalk Server and Services is. And then we will go about how MSIT leveraged this hybrid capability of BizTalk Server and Services to meet their B2B requirements. So in that context, let's talk about how hybrid integration works. So let me introduce Sam. He can talk to you about hybrid integration, and he will also be introducing you about BizTalk Server and Services. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you. Am I on speaker? I guess, yeah. So hybrid integration is really something that's coming up. I mean, a lot of companies have B2B connections. We've seen that in the past with BizTalk Server. But more and more companies are moving applications to the cloud. Think about SaaS applications. Your CRM is in the cloud. Maybe you have vertical specific things in the cloud. And suddenly you have to integrate systems from inside your network with systems that run outside of your network, systems that you don't always control, that have different security mechanisms, that suddenly have to reach from the outside to the inside. So maybe they need to do a call to an on-prem line of business application, think about SAP and so on. And that's, there's a lot of new challenges. I talked about security, there's latency involved. Sometimes we have tracking of different platforms on different places, so that's definitely one that we will talk more about in the MSIT study. And often what we see is that you have different options to do hybrid integration. You can say, okay, I have an on-prem enterprise service bus, BizTalk Server, for example, and BizTalk Server has capabilities to be reachable from the cloud. Yeah, there's service bus capabilities where you can just have an on-prem web service endpoint, could be JSON, so modern applications are possible. And you can make that visible and reachable through a public DNS, that's relay. You have other things, for example, you can do service bus connectivity. So a lot of things that are much simpler than the past, where we had to set up a DMZ with ISA and, you know, reverse proxy firewalls and all these things. That took a lot of time. If you look what we have now, you know, the cloud-enabled adapters, it's much faster. You only need outbound connectivity from your BizTalk server to the cloud, and then you're all set. I mean, you have external connectivity possible. That's the on-prem thing. Often you have, is there a question? But that was the first option. So the question was, do you have to have BizTalk on-premise? For that scenario, you could say, OK, I have my BizTalk on-premise because I want to be close to my local applications. For example, your ERP system is there. You want to connect to your ERP system, to your warehouse system, whatever you have. If these are on-prem, then it makes sense to have your enterprise service bus also on-prem, right? It could be anything. I mean, there's standards available where you can connect things with each other. So,
okay, let me repeat that question. So the question is, do I need to have an on-prem BizTalk server to make use of the capabilities on the cloud? Is that the question? So the answer is no. You don't need to have an on-prem BizTalk server necessarily just to connect to that. So the extended answer for the one that Sam was trying to address is if you have other ERP or CRM or LOB systems that is on-prem, for which there is BizTalk server already kind of transacting with that, you can continue to use that server and leverage the cloud capabilities. So, but if you have some other ESB systems which is already providing you that, you are more than welcome to use it. So connectivity to the cloud is through a straightforward REST endpoint. You don't need any other additional adapters just to post and get messages back. Did that help answer your question? Yeah. Go ahead.
So that was the on-prem. What you also could do is just a cloud-based integration hub, and that could be BizTalk services, where you say, okay, we have all the connections in the cloud. Imagine that you have mostly B2B and SaaS integration. Then you could say, okay, we have everything in the cloud. It doesn't make sense to invest in an on-prem thing. What's most common, in my opinion, nowadays with the modern applications is a combination of on-prem and cloud-based integration hubs. And that's what we will see in the case study of Guru, of MSIT actually, where you have BizTalk services in the cloud and BizTalk server on-prem. So a little quick introduction on what BizTalk services is. It's what we call a cloud scale ASB. So it's something that you can easily grow with your with the load. So it's a pay-as-you-go model. You can easily scale it out and scale it back. If needed, and it's a managed service. So that's important to get the infrastructure, the service, all the out-of-the-box capabilities. They are managed and they are evolved by the Microsoft Teams. It's all about configuration. So typically you drag, drop, you configure things, you have all the settings there. You can customize, and that's the next thing, and you just deploy, right? What Microsoft really understood is that it's key and important in integration scenarios. I mean, if you have done integration, you know that customers do anything. I mean, I've seen XML files with a flat line in front of it. Sometimes you have to, you know, edit things because the namespace is not supported, whatever. These things have to be possible, and that's where the extensibility comes in. So you can hook up things in the BizTalk services like custom components. You can use the tracking to build your own dashboards and things like that. So that's BizTalk services. What I will do now is give a quick demo of the two main capabilities. So you can do EDI. EDI is mostly B2B connections. So you can send invoices and, you know, sales documents typically, X12 and Edifact with your B2B partners. And you have the EAI part, where you can have the on-prem connections. So you can connect from the cloud to an on-prem BizTalk or an on-prem LOB system. That's what I will be showing now. So what I will do is I will connect to my virtual machine. And there I have what we call an itinerary of BizTalk services. And this is, let's say, an entire end-to-end message flow. So what you see on the left, I'm picking up data from an FTP setting. So this is a folder that has some configuration items. So you know the port and all these things are there. If a file arrives, the file will be routed to what we call a bridge. And in that bridge, I can do processing. One of the things I can do there, and let me use the other one, is I can parse flat files, for example. So that's a common scenario. What I will do in my demo, I will drop a flat file with some order lines. That flat file will be parsed in this bridge based on the flat file schema. So that's just the same as we have with BizTalk. There's compatibility between schemas. If you have existing schemas in BizTalk for flat files, you can just move them to this, you know, to BizTalk services. And then you have different stages. I will not go through all of them, but you can validate, you can enrich, you can extract properties. And one of the properties I will extract here is the quantity. And you can configure that. What's also important is that you can do transformations. So people who have been doing mapping in the past, what you can see here is that you have a new mapper that is much more intuitive to do, you know, complex transformations. So this mapper there also transforms, you know, from A to B. There's tools available to do migration from your BizTalk maps to this new maps, and so on. So that's a bridge here. If I switch back to the entire itinerary, what I do here, I see that there's routing. So the output of that bridge will be an XML instead of the flat file, because that's what I configured there. And it has a property. And then there's a routing. And this routing, for example, here, is if the quantity, the total quantity of the order is larger than 1,000, then you have to route to this bridge. Otherwise, you have to route here. And this is a pass-through bridge that would just write a message to a queue, a service bus queue in this case. If I have one that is larger than 1,000, again, I have a routing decision here, and I will either route it to the FTP, or I will route it to an on-prem, and this is a SQL database. So that's what I will show here. You can very easily create a new SQL target where you just set the properties, and these are exactly, this is the same wizard that we know from BizTalk server, from the LOB adapter pack. So where you can just specify the settings here. You can click next. Then you can specify, do I want to connect to a stored procedure or a table? You know, everything should be familiar if you have experience with the BizTalk pack. And you can just continue configuring everything. In the end, you will have an endpoint. And this endpoint there is reachable from the cloud. That's using Service Bus Relay. So if you look at this endpoint or the demo, on the right, I see that it has a public endpoint, http://servicebus.windows.net/my-relative-path. So people who have the right credentials can call that endpoint. And that will be linked with my, you know, SQL line of business adapter. How do I connect from my bridge then? Well, it's pretty straightforward. I can just drag and drop from here to there an item, and I can just make a new link. So that's what I have done. I can then deploy everything to my portal, and I can start doing my demo, right? That's what I have configured, pre-configured and pre-deployed. So what I will do, that itinerary has been configured, and I have prepared a very small order. And since we are in Barcelona, I wanted to add some tapas, because that's all we have been eating the past days. So I will order some things, and you can see the total order quantity is larger than 1,000, right? It's 4,000 plus 300 or something. So if I drag that to the FTP folder, that's something here. Just I should first show that I'm not cheating. My on-prem SQL is empty, right? So if I just drag and drop It takes some time. I think I configured it at 20 seconds. So BizTalk services will pick up that FTP file. It will do some routing. It will do the transformation to the format that is needed by the LOB adapter. And that's the table layout from the store procedure. Let's have a check in F5. And we can see that the data is, or that the file is removed. And we can see that there's three new entries. Oops. Should be here. I mean, you saw the entries there. So you can see that the entries were in the table. OK? So that was straightforward, a routing mapping. And you have the end-to-end model there from FTP to your SQL server on-prem. I'm on a network here that I don't control myself. I didn't have to ask for any firewall ports. This is just outbound connectivity from that server there. I showed SQL, but
some of you have been using BizTalk as a ESB, right? So most of you have been using it just for routing purposes, picking it up from one location, doing some transformation, sending it out to a different location. So that's a very small percentage of BizTalk server's feature capabilities as a server. So this is one area where we believe that if you're just receiving a message from, like, let's say an FTP, which is a very common location, or if you're receiving it from SFTP, which is also a very common one in many of the enterprises, that means you are using a public internet protocol to receive that large data. And you want to split it, or you want to validate and transform it, and eventually send it to an on-prem system. So this is the scenario which Sam just showed, that is, I received it from an FTP, passed that incoming data, which was a flat file, made some decisions based on some certain values in the incoming data, and routed it to an on-prem system. Yeah. Any questions on this so far? All right.
So the second scenario would be the B2B part. That's a demo where we have more portal enablement. So what I will do, I will just connect to my BizTalk portal. So this is the web-based portal where you can configure all of the settings. And what you can see, if you're familiar with EDI, and if you have been so lucky to work with EDIFACT and X12, I might be too long signed in here. Within that portal, you should be able to configure all the partner settings. Let's try that one again. So you set up trading partner you do trading partner management of your different partners. So you will be able to specify all the settings that you typically have if you do these communications between partners. So let's hope for a better result here. And I have some customers defined in this pure demo portal. And one of these, and then you have agreements. So what I specify here, I have an agreement between enterprise and customer. And here it's just, you know, the typical specification where I say this is X12. You have some, you know, qualifiers and so on to identify the partners. You have some basic settings like what type of schemas do you expect? Do you expect to have an 850? That's the typical order in X12. Or if you were to have EDIFACT, you can have all the dispatch advices and so on. So you can just upload those schemas. Again, the schemas are exactly the same as the ones that you know from BizTalk Server. So if you have BizTalk Server investments for EDI, the migration is rather easy to do. And there's also a tool to import your trading partner settings. So that's the typical agreement that you set up between the partners. And then an agreement can be linked with a bridge. So the bridge is the thing that I just deployed for EDI, for EAI. Remember the deployment there. What I do, I also have a bridge here defined. And there I specify all the settings in a very intuitive way. What happens if someone sends an EDI message or an X12 message from that agreement to this bridge? Well, first of all, you have some basic tracking settings. Like, do you want to track and so on? Then you can specify the transport. So how do I receive, how do partners send their messages to this bridge, to this endpoint? In this case, this is HTTP, but I could use other things like FTP and so on. There's also support for AS2, but I'm not diving into those details. You can do some basic settings like promoted properties, getting things from headers and so on. You can then specify a transformation. So you can do the transformation in this bridge. And then you can define where should I route my message, my transform message to. In this case, I just routed to a relay binding, but there's different things, different transport protocols like Azure Blobs, Azure Service Bus, and another bridge. So I could route it to another bridge so you can chain bridges and so on. And here you can also specify the filters, like you could say if it's partner A, I will route it to that endpoint. If it's partner B, I will route it to this queue and so on. So you can use promoted properties just as we would use them with BizTalk server. And you can do the exact same thing on the send side, okay? That's the configuration part. How do you then can easily test it? Well, there's a nice add-in in Visual Studio that allows you to browse all these bridges. So I have my bridges open and I have this agreement here. So what I can do, I can just say send a test message. I can load the message, and people who are familiar with X12 might recognize this very nice syntax, which is called X12. I call it the JSON from the 80s. It's also very compact and so on. And I will just change the content type. If I press send here, it will be sent to my bridge. Now, remember that the bridge was sending to a relay endpoint, so that means it's sending to something on-prem, to a web service. I will just use the standard tool. And now I have in this console application an endpoint that's publicly reachable if you have the right security settings, and the bridge, the EDI bridge, will send that message all the way to my local machine. So you should be able to see the message that was received, the EDI message. You should be able to see it appear here. Of course, that's not what you would do in production. In production, you would send it to your local systems or to a BizTalk server, and that's what we will see in the next demo or in the next presentation from Guru. So I will just press send here. You can see that I get back a SOAP response. You can also see that I have received a message here, and it might be still open. No. Anyway, so the message has been received. Someone was sending to a public endpoint. In this case, this was just an HTTP post with the right security settings. So my business partner could send to AS2, to FTP, to HTTP, depending on the configuration settings. It gets parsed, and then in the end, it's routed to the right local endpoint. In this case, this console application. Any questions on this one?
Thank you, Sam. So that was quite an intense demo of a very complicated scenario in a quick 10 minutes. So I don't know how many of you were able to grasp it at that speed. If you are not, how many of you have used BizTalk Server as a B2B parser, processing engine? A few of you. So in BizTalk Server, we tried to create B2B integrated with an AI engine. So it was not just an enterprise application integrator. It could also process B2B messages. The uniqueness about B2B is there is a standard, be it X12 or Edifact, which defines how this particular message needs to be processed. So there is an agreement associated with that. You associate that agreement with each trading partner. So there should be an ability to manage your trading partners and an ability to associate the trading partner with an agreement. And then that agreement says, how should I be parsing these incoming messages from this partner? So all of these things are industry standards. It's not like Microsoft made it up or a particular company made it up. It's an industry standard. So there are like some 3,700 plus schemas that various industries provide support, be it banking, be it retail, be it hospitals. So there are various worldwide standards. So as integration platform, BizTalk ships all of these schemas out of the box. Natively, EDI is not XML format. It is, as you saw that sample, it is a weird flat file format. So how do we make that flat file consumable to a modern application? So that's where BizTalk plays the critical role of converting that or translating that flat file into an XML message. And once you have it in XML, you can do a lot of other things, like how do I can read a particular key value and then send it out somewhere else. So what we have done in this cloud platform is take all of those things together and make it like a simple wizard-based interface where you don't have to know a whole lot about how EDA parsing or processing is done behind the scene. So you need to know more about what is that agreement that I have with my trading partner, what type of message is he sending. They may be sending me an invoice, they may be sending me a purchase order, they may be sending me a sales order, whatever that EDA message that they are sending to, and what am I going to be doing with that? Am I going to be putting it into my SAP system or my SQL system or Oracle system, whatever my downstream system is. So that's the only thing that is expected of this particular user to be known, rather than trying to understand how to parse EDA. So that whole thing is now a simplified cloud interface. So now, coming to the real world case study problem that we were trying to understand. A little bit of a context of what MSIT is and why should we care about that. As most of you might be aware, Microsoft has its own internal IT shop called Microsoft IT. It's one of the world's largest. If it were to be a company by itself, it would be almost 30% of what Microsoft size is. It's a very large organization which contains and it processes messages. If you look at the very last pink box there, there is almost every type of transaction that you can imagine, starting all the way from supply chain to a treasury management to distribution management to stock trading. There's almost every type of transaction that you can imagine inside an enterprise. All of these things are done by centralized Microsoft IT. So, like, let's say if Microsoft decided to go and not decided, they went ahead and acquired a large company like Nokia. Nokia already has a huge supply chain. They already have a large partner ecosystem. They already have a large distributor network. So how does, once you acquire such a large company, you need to make sure that that integration goes smoothly with the rest of the supply chain that you already have. Microsoft already is a large original equipment manufacturer themselves. They manufacture so many hardware devices like mice, keyboard, and monitors and those kind of stuff, along with now Surface and Xbox. So there is already a supply chain system. There is already a distribution system. Now, once you go and acquire a large company like Nokia, how are you going to integrate the two together? So that's a challenge that MSIT faces almost on an everyday basis. A large company like Microsoft, they go and acquire tens of companies in a year. So this integration becomes a huge challenge, especially when you're talking about all of those various services. Those services also include payroll management. It includes banking transactions. So if you're integrating like a whole new set of 40,000 additional employees, how are you going to manage that payroll? So those are typical enterprise integration problems that you face with. In MSIT, they started off with BizTalk server way back 2006-2007 days. And in 2009, when we introduced EDA as a first-class citizen of as part of BizTalk, they used to have an IBM-based system called Gentran, which has been there for a long, long time. It's a great system. It's been there for a long time. So they started moving from Gentran into the Microsoft technology based out of BizTalk, and it was a work in progress for a while, since it cannot be done in a year or two. So they started off in 2009, and it was still a work in progress until about 2011, moving out of Gentran into BizTalk. So the number of systems, sheer number of hardware machines that was required for my MSIT to manage, was somewhere in the range of around 400 plus BizTalk servers. Just the number of servers hosting BizTalk was close to 400 plus way back in 2010. So apart from that, you needed SQL servers, you needed FTP servers, you needed development machines. So it was a complex set of hardware infrastructure that was required to manage this. I'm talking about 2010. This is even before something like Nokia and Skype were acquired. So it was getting harder and harder for MSIT to manage this on an everyday basis, saying that, hey, how am I going to, if I get a new partner to be onboarded, it was a matter of months. It was not like weeks or days. And it was not just the infrastructure cost, it was the sheer cost of operations. So I'll show you, I think somewhere further down. Yeah, here. So then they went through this process of consolidation, saying that, okay, it is not just about the production servers. I have got lots of DR servers, that is disaster recovery servers. Then I also have redundant servers for geo redundancy. So how do I make sure that I can consolidate these things for each hardware update? Because hardware update happens every 3 years because the hardware depreciates, so you need to update it. So they went through a consolidation process. So between 2010 and 2012, if you look at it, the biggest change was like amortized infrastructure cost came down from 60K to 40K per month. So this is on a monthly basis, they were telling like, okay, if I need to just maintain this, how much should I be spending? So this was so far I'm not talking anything technical. These were all business decisions or business drivers telling how should I be thinking about managing this infrastructure? How should I be thinking about managing B2B as a business going forward? So these were the business challenges. So between 2012 and 2014 is when they thought about saying that, okay, there is Microsoft has already invested very heavily on all these data centers sitting out there as a public cloud. If you are able to scale at that rate, we should definitely be able to take up these 400 machines and make it available as that part of the same infrastructure. So that was the first decision point. It took a lot of technical challenges after that to say, okay, if I have to take all of these Microsoft Treasury workload, or if I have to take all of these Microsoft's payroll workload, these are all PII data. So it is there is compliance associated with that. There is security stuff that are associated with that. I need to make sure that it meets that SLAs that are mandated by various compliance agencies. If I'm doing a banking transaction over SWIFT, I need to make sure that I meet that SLA. So all of these compliance requirements came in and said, we cannot afford to put all these things on a public cloud. Can we have a private cloud of our own? So then we said, like, okay, instead of, if we can do it on a private cloud, we should be able to do it on a public cloud. That was the engineering challenge. So what we'll be seeing for the rest of the talk today is about how did we go about doing that? What were the challenges involved in doing that? So for that, I'll be taking a particular sample about a B2B integration. That is, currently Microsoft has around 3,500 plus, 3,400 plus partner streams. A partner could be something as simple as DHL or FedEx. These are all the various services, service providers within the US with whom Microsoft contracts. So if I have to take up FedEx as a stream, that means I'm sending something to FedEx. FedEx is going to acknowledge it back to me. And that transaction happens like hundreds of times every single day. So how am I going to make sure that transaction every single time is recorded and it is audited, it is archived, and it is secured? So that's one small stream. FedEx is the simplest one because all that you are giving is a postal order. Replace FedEx with Bank of America. So if I'm making a payment to Bank of America, that transaction still has to be secure, it has to be audited, it has to be tracked and traced. But now the additional compliance requirement, because it is a financial transaction, I need to make sure that there is an SLA bound to it, and I meet that SLA every time. And I need to be able to report on how many times did I meet that SLA or how many times did I miss that SLA, because there is a financial liability associated with that. So these were some of the challenges with those various 3,400 plus streams. So the first thing that was required to do a pilot to say, hey, whether it is even possible to do, was to go through a meticulous study of all of these work streams that they had, which took roughly around 7 months between 2012 and 2013. It was almost a 7 month exercise trying to figure out what are these individual partner streams consisting of, what is the business impact of moving them now versus moving them 6 months from now, or updating now from 6 months from now. Because that was a very key driver in terms of how product team looked at the maturity of the platform. We were building these Bistrox services as MSIT was going through this workload analysis. So Bistrox services was not there online up until 2013 November. So it's just about like 6-7 months old. So MSIT was one of the first, not even customer at the time, they were just one of the first requirements providers, so to say, hey, these are the things that we need for us to continue to use the product or us to begin to use the product. Those were like key input for us because there are a lot of things that were outside of Bistrox that Azure as a platform had to provide. HIPAA compliance, for instance. Encryption at rest. And encrypted channel all the way from on-prem to the cloud and back. And the ability to track it in a centralized store. And the ability to have a centralized error handler. All of these things were standard things that any enterprise would benefit. So even though those requirements came from MSIT, these are things that any enterprise would benefit. So between 2012 and 2013, MSIT was in this analysis process where they were giving us that input while we were building the product. Any questions on this so far? All right. So these were some of the principles based on which they were thinking about how do we think about the cloud-based integration, which I think most of it we used. The more interesting part was this build good breaks to mitigate risks. This is an important one. I call it out because the first thing they said is like, hey, if I fail at any point of time, no matter which stream it is, if I have an iota of doubt that this may not go through, I need to have a big red switch. I press that and I am back to my known good state. The known good state is they have that 400 plus Bistock servers doing its job. Those servers never failed. Since 2009, they have been working. So it's been past 5+ years. They haven't had a single failure in any of these streams. So they said, like, I need to have that kind of a robustness as my fallback. So you, whatever that you do on the cloud, you need to provide me a big switch there that I press that and I am back to my known good state on the server with no additional configuration changes. So the DNS changes and my traffic is routed to my server and everything goes clean. So this was a key requirement. They said, like, this has to be there on day one. So we had to build that. And now let's go through that. So this is where the most of the CTOs kind of, they pop up their eyes here, because if you look at the reduction in cost, that big red line which shows about the operational cost, I'm not talking about infrastructure cost here. I'm talking about operational cost. Because infrastructure cost is an amortized cost over a period of time. But it is the operational cost that comes on a monthly basis, where most people's time is spent in managing the servers. They're not actually adding value in terms of building something new. They are just there managing day to day the Windows servers, the SQL servers, the Bistock servers, the web servers, the FTP servers. Somebody needs to be sitting there managing it. At least for a large IT organization like MSIT, the challenge was on operational side. The infrastructure side, they were like, okay, I pay the cost for it. It is going to work for me for the next 3-4 years. It's okay for me to recover that cost in the next 3-4 years. But the operational part of it, of just managing the sheer number of people and not being able to leverage them for higher order bits, that is what was more interesting. So the way the cost is coming down there is because most people who are just managing servers now are actually adding value to the chain. They are now able to do these real maps and build schemas or build better agreements with those trading partners, manage the SLAs, rather than managing the servers. They are not sitting there updating their Windows servers or updating SQL servers every two, 3 months. So that is the operational, value add in terms of TCO for any of you in the room who is thinking about it as how do I recover cost. So Bistock services on Azure, it takes up a lot of resources. So there is a lot of compute, it is a very compute intensive application. There's a lot of storage associated with that. So from the infrastructure cost of it, I wouldn't say that it's a big difference between if you have Bistock server running on-prem versus Bistock services. But where it does make a difference is on the operational efficiency. So now let us look at an overview of the data flow before and after as to what are the changes that we did. And what is the role of MAPS? MAPS stands for Microsoft Azure Bistock Services. And role of on-prem Bistock server. And why not Bistock Adapter Services? BAS stands for Bistock Adapter Services. So this was the, let me get down here. So this is the initial design of the architecture that they had. So you had some external partners and external value-added networks that were sending directly to an on-prem gateway. So the vertical line that you see in between is the firewall. So these guys were sending across the firewall. That means I had to punch holes through the firewall to get this data in. And the internet gateway would just send it out to an EDI server, set of EDI servers or set of EAI servers. So when I say set of EDI or EAI, that's about like 400 plus servers on each side. So those EDI servers behind the scene would talk to application A or application B after it processes the EDI. So it's the very simplified schematic of what we used to have earlier to 2012. So the design change that we have made here is we have a gateway, which is that big red switch that I was talking about. And the partner is sending messages directly to Bistock Services, which is an endpoint on the cloud. And all of the EDI transactions are happening on the cloud. And I'm sending directly to App A, or I'm sending to a Bistock server on-prem, or to an adapter service on-prem. So if you look at the number of servers that I have, I removed all of the EDI servers, and I'm using the local Bistock server just for purposes of tracking and connectivity. I'm using it like a queue server to do a store and forward, and not necessarily as a processing server. So the footprint of on-prem servers significantly came down because I moved the workload to the cloud. So what it also gives me is the ability to keep my services highly available and ready to do disaster recovery at a very short notice of less than 6 minutes of time, and be able to securely provide that access without having to punch any security holes through my firewall. Right? So the making EDI application highly available is a really challenging effort, because for those of you who are managing Bistock server here, you might realize that if I have to make an FTP location highly available, the only way to do that today is I have to cluster it. So the cost just doubles because I need two servers, one just sitting there doing nothing, because it has to provide high availability. And on top of it comes disaster recovery. And on top of it comes redundancy. So your cost just multiplies because of high availability as one big requirement. It is not adding anything in terms of performance. It is not adding in any additional capabilities. So those are the things that cloud addresses just by moving it here. So now let's go through the key changes. We said like Azure is the gateway for all incoming requests, and most of the processing is happening in the cloud. And integration for various Azure workloads, that means Azure workloads such as things that are running on a website, things that are running on a virtual machine, things that are running as individual worker roles, I can use a common integration engine for that. And the on-prem footprint is significantly reduced, and it is specialized and focused at providing connectivity. And I'm now able to retire a lot of legacy solutions. So we will see what were those legacy solutions and how did we end up retiring that. So role of maps in this case was specifically around it was providing as a gateway for all EDI transactions. And in any typical EDI transaction, if you look at it, the challenge is with transformation. An EDI message typically consists like tens of thousands of orders. So it comes in as a one big batch of like, let's say, some 50 MB or 100 MB flat file from an FTP location. And it contains like a big collection of orders together. Like end of day transaction in a bank or end of day transaction in a retail chain. So when Walmart sends out their end of day stuff, you're literally talking about hundreds and thousands of transactions batched together. So how am I going to do that transformation of all of those transactions? Transformation is basically your Bistock maps. So that is the most compute intensive part on the server side. So most of the time, if you look at it, your CPU usage on the server will never exceed like 35-40%. But the end of day transactions or end of week transactions, your CPU is like so super intensive, which results in a huge backlog on your queue, be it your message box or MSM queue. You start building up a backlog because you are busy doing transformation, which doesn't typically happen during the rest of the day. So to accommodate for that backlog, you end up provisioning additional servers, which may not be useful for the rest of the day. So that elastic compute is what was missing on the server side. And in this case, Maps is also taking care of error handling and resubmitting. So it is also possible that when you are sending like a 100,000 number of transactions, there will be some errors, some data missing or some data not properly validated. There will be errors. So you need to be able to pull out only those erroneous files and resubmit them after correction. So this was one key functionality that was required. And the on-prem BizTalk server, we used it primarily as connectivity to my LOB system. LOB system in this particular case was an array of SAP servers. And then it also acted as a store and forward agent. That means it will receive from the cloud once the processing is done. But my SAP system may or may not be ready to process it at that time. So the on-prem BizTalk server receives that incoming data, holds it in place, and whenever SAP system is available, it pushes it out there. So it acts as a store and forward system. And it is also the fallback environment. As I said, I need that big red switch. When things fail, I should be able to just press that and my fallback system kicks in. So my on-prem system is still there until such time all of this migration is complete. So it is currently a fallback system also. So this is not intended to be a complicated system. So I put it all in one big slide. But if you were to look at it, these are like multiple pieces of a complex system. Let me see if this thing works. Okay. So this side of it, the far left, is where the on-prem systems are. So what I have done here is your BizTalk server talking to an LOB system, and it has a local SQL server. Most of you are familiar with that part. And here I've kind of given you a open view of what we are doing on the cloud side. So let's go through two scenarios. One scenario is where Microsoft is receiving data from an external system or an external partner. And the second scenario is where Microsoft is sending data to an external partner. So when I'm sending data, I'm usually receiving it from my SAP system. BizTalk does it receive from SAP. BizTalk, on-prem BizTalk server receives it from SAP and pushes that IDOC or BAPI onto the map system. Right? So this is on-prem BizTalk receiving from LOB. So follow this green line. So I'm doing a protocol conversion there. Protocol conversion is basically I'm receiving it from BizTalk as a HTTP post and converting it into that XML file or an IDOC file into EDI document, because the external trading partner is expecting an EDI document. So I'm converting it into an EDI document, and the external trading partner is also expecting it not on a HTTP post or as a file post. He's expecting it on an AS2 protocol. So I'm using an AS2 bridge to send it to an external trading partner. Right? I'm just following through this second part here. You guys with me?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah. Okay. So as I send that, the external trading partner is going to send me back an acknowledgement, and he's also going to send me an MDN back saying that I did receive it. And all of these things need to happen at the EDI level. Right? So BizTalk server's job here was just to receive from my SAP system, post it, and I'm done. Right? But when I post it, I'm doing it like a request response post. That means I posted it to the EDI endpoint. The EDI is supposed to do whatever it is supposed to do and send me back a response saying that I did complete it successfully. Because if I did not get back a response, this guy is still responsible to make sure that I'm going to get it back from SAP. Right? So I sent an SAP order. I want to make sure that it did reach that partner at the other end, and I got an acknowledgement from that. And based on that acknowledgement, Maps is going to acknowledge back to my on-prem BizTalk server saying that, okay, that the order that you sent, this is the acknowledgement for you. Right? Only when that is done, that session is closed. Your question, please.
So in this scenario, you don't have the partners on-premise. You only have them in the cloud, right?
Partner on-prem. So within the enterprise, do I have additional partners? Correct.
So you're not able to fall back to on-premise in this scenario?
No, in this particular diagram, I'm not. But actually, I have that partner registered in both the places.
Okay, so right. If you have, how would you synchronize the partners?
I'll come to that. Okay. So let me finish this and I'll come to that. Great question. Just hold on to the thought. So now, so any other questions in the in this flow here? I will show you an example of how that works. And the other scenario where partner is posting to Microsoft. So this is where the partner is posting to Microsoft. So it comes to that big red switch, the traffic switch. The traffic switch says, OK, send it down to AS to receive. So the partner is sending me an EDI message. So it is coming to me as an AS2 document. So the AS2 goes through an EDI receive where I'm converting that EDI into a flat file message, a standard flat file or an IDOC that ACP can understand. And then it goes out to my on-prem BizTalk system for pushing it out to ACP. So that whole thing looks fair and simple. So then why do we have this big brown box here? So the big brown box here, if you look at it, it is just about tracking, archiving, suspending. Right? Because we are talking about real business data here. So we want to make sure that I can track the data, who sent what to whom and when and how. I track everything. And I also see I'm archiving the data for whatever that compliance requirement is. It may be 3 months, it may be 4 years, it may be 2 years. I'm going to archive that. And if things go wrong, I will suspend that message. So based on that suspension, somebody can go and resubmit it, repair it, or do an administrative act on that. So all of these three things, if you look at it, it is just for processing failures or to make sure that I'm in compliance with something. So that is what that big brown box there is. But what we have built on top of that, if you look at it, there is a retry service, and then there is a command line query and resubmit tool. Those two tools are specifically built by MSIT for their particular use case, wherein they said, I will have a retry service if there was a network failure. You are going to suspend that message anyway. Like, let's say, if from here, if I was trying to send something to BizTalk server on-prem, and there was a network failure, that means it could not be sent to on-prem BizTalk server itself. So where do you send that message? Typically, Maps will just suspend it. But nothing wrong with the data. If I just retry it, probably it will go through again. So what they did was they just wrote a simple retry service. It was just a web role sitting up there. All it does is just go through the suspended queue and see if there is somebody sitting there in suspended queue and see the status of it. If it was because of a network failure, I'll just retry it. Right? So I don't have to go through this whole process again. Everything is done. I just pick it up from suspended queue and retry. So that was the retry service. And then they also wrote a tool for query. So we'll show a look at the tool. So what it does is, in case of tracking, there are a couple of things. Because I'm picking up something from the server, and I'm sending it to a service. That service sends it to some external thing. How am I going to make sure that it is the same data that I picked from here that went all the way there? I need to have a common tracking, or at least a single pane of glass to look at that data, irrespective of wherever it is. So what they ended up doing was reading from multiple tracking stores, because Maps has its own tracking store and an archive store. BizTalk server already has a tracking store, and you need to have a way of stitching them together and viewing them all. So they created that command line tool. It's the same tool that is also used for resubmitting. So on top of it, they said, like, hey, I already have a very large investment in System Center, which is what most of the enterprises already do for alerting and monitoring and managing events. So when things go wrong, I would rather use my existing System Center investment to be alerted rather than building something new. So, well, System Center now can read data from a standard SQL store, and based on the data, it can say something went wrong or things are good. So they just created a management pack kind of a thing for based on the tracking data. So for the same thing that System Center, you could also write from BizTalk server events. So if BizTalk server could not write to ACP, I still get the same event. And I could also get alerts and events from external systems, like this network retry service. Right? If I was retrying and there was a network failure, I should be alerted. So all of these things are going to the same System Center. So now the operational guys get one single pane of glass to get all the alerts, and they have one tool to see the flow of data, and they have one tool to resubmit and repair. Right? Even though we are talking about really disparate systems, data originating from SAP, going through BizTalk server, going through BizTalk service, going through a partner system and coming back, but you are able to manage it all in one place. Anybody has any questions on this diagram? Yes, please. Sorry, not able to hear you. So the question is about what is the implementation regarding tracking API? What can you get out of tracking API? Okay. So the question is about what can I get out of tracking API? So tracking API is like the tracking database, we don't expose the schema itself because we can keep changing the schema based on whatever future requirements is. So you don't go access the database directly. So the tracking database is stored on SQL Azure. So what we provide you is an interface to that, which is extensible, based on which you can build some custom tools. So I think we will show one of those tools where you can visualize the tracking information. So this particular command line tool that I'm talking about is based on the tracking API. Come again, please. Currently, it is available only on the cloud. It is a tracking API is not, it is different from BizTalk server's implementation. So it is not the same API, right? So for the server, you still have access to the database. And a quick look at how we went about doing this planning for this migration. So the first part, the first stream classification thing that I was talking about, that was the most time-consuming part, which took about like 7 months of MSIT's time, where they had to come up with some kind of a heat map to say what are the streams that I need to migrate first and why and how, what is the business impact of doing that. So they classified it into three buckets, saying that low business impact, medium business impact, high business impact. So the business impact purely is from the relevance of that partner for a given time, right? So if I can, like, let's say, for instance, during the holiday season, you want to make sure that your DHL and FedEx systems are up and running because they have to deliver that many goods at that time. If you're moving DHL sometime, during, like, let's say, in September, October timeframe, they're not that busy. Right, so you can afford, their developers are available, you can continue to work with them, some changes need to be done, you have that freedom of time window to do. But if you try to do it during the Thanksgiving time, those guys are really busy. They cannot go and modify anything on their system. Same thing when you're dealing with a financial system or financial partner, you want to make sure that you are not doing it during the month end. So what is the business impact, both for the partner and for Microsoft when you're actually doing this migration? So they came up with this timeline based on that. So that within the timeline, they said, okay, during this month, I'm going to work on these partners. That means I have to make sure that all of the streams associated with that partner, it is done in one phase. So we don't have to keep going back to them over and over. That means I have to build those maps that are pertinent to those schemas. Right? The maps are the most complicated part. So why is it most complicated? Because that's the only thing that you need to build. There is no other custom code involved anywhere here. The only thing that is specific to that partner is the map that they are using. Or the transformation that they are using. So MSIT invested very heavily as in about eight months of their time with some 60 plus developers looking purely at the maps. Right? All of these maps are already running on BizTalk server. How do I make sure that these maps can be reused? And what are the things that I can change now that I have an ability to look at it completely in detail? Because most of these maps are built over a period of time. And there are lots of point-in-time changes that were done. So now they took time to go through that and say, okay, these are things that we can, that are redundant, we could reuse, or we could make them as libraries. So they spent a lot of time trying to understand that part. And being a Microsoft partner, what they were, the contribution that MSIT came up with was like, hey, I'm going through this migration anyway. We are building all these maps that are already there in BizTalk server, moving it to the new infrastructure. I can build a migration tool. As we learn more and more about this structure of these maps, I can build a migration tool so that other customers can use. Right? Most of these scenarios that you're talking about, it is an EDI schema to an SAP schema. The EDI schema is not going to change drastically. The SAP schema is not going to change drastically, but both of them can be customized by individual customers. Right? So I will provide you some base maps. If you're telling me about an 840 and an order 05 in SAP, it's a base map I can give you. From the base map, somebody can customize rather than building everything from ground up. So those are kind of templates that they have started building now. And they have also come up with a migration tool which currently works for most of their scenarios, which they want to generalize and publish as a downloadable tool for all the customers. So going through these various development work phases, first was building transforms. That was obviously the most complicated part. And the second and the subsequent ones, if we say porting agreements, identifying tap partners, those kind of stuff, most of them were, I would say, relatively trivial work when compared to building transforms, because that is the one which took the developer's time. Everything else was non-development effort, because either Bistrock already had a way of exporting those agreements, or security requirements, those kind of stuff, were all product team work. So the thing that only MSIT could do was building transforms. So let's look at these scenarios, some of them. Milestone to production use. So first of all, to come up with an ability to say, hey, these are the maps that we have built. And then we need to say, what is it the platform capable of? Is the platform ready to take on this, let's say, a high business impact stream? A high business impact could be, let's say, Citibank. If I'm doing Citibank, I'm doing, like, let's say, literally about 10 million transactions every single month. If I have to take that stream, is the Bistrock platform mature enough to do that today? So what is the platform readiness for managing that stream? What is the customer readiness for taking onto that stream? Both of these things they had to do. And then they had to see what is, identify that one first stream that I can take for production, which should be a representative of the type of streams that matches that category. If I say it's a medium business, that representative sample should mean that it addresses all of those medium business scenarios. So identify that first stream. And then come to that next stage of tens of streams and hundreds of streams and those kind of stuff. So this was a pure migration plan that took a lot of brain work. If you look at it now, it sounds simple, but it took a lot of effort because we could not afford to fail at any stage. The cost of failure was very high. So the way they went about doing that was we took a very engineering approach to that. It's like, okay, if I can manage Windows Server and if I can manage SQL Server with millions of customers, we should be able to manage this migration with thousands of customers. So the way that we thought about it was like, okay, we'll have a tap program for this. Recruit handful of customers. Tell them that, hey, this is exactly how we're going to do this. Are you interested in doing this? If you are interested, this is what is expected of you. Right? Exactly how we will test SQL Server, for instance, how we will test Bistrock Server. We take a handful of customers, give them the scenarios, understand their scenarios, build the platform for them, walk them through us or along with us. So we took the same tap approach. And in this particular case, MSIT went ahead and recruited about 200 customers. Out of their 3,400 plus streams, they took some 200 customers. And from 200, they started prioritizing for one for first month, second month, so on and so forth. And DHL and Zones were two customers that they recruited on day one. And they completed both of them in a span of 3 hours' time. Right? So the customers didn't even know that they actually migrated. Right? So they had prepared everything in hand beforehand, and all that the customer had to do was just change the URL on their side and started working. So this was before September of this year, like 3 months ago. September of this year. So planning for DR. So one of the compliance requirements, obviously, for MSIT was disaster recovery. So disaster recovery in cloud means completely different than what we are used to on-prem. So they had to say, hey, if a data center goes down, what if there is an earthquake? There's nothing wrong with your data center, but there's an earthquake. That means you do not have connectivity. or there is a storm that hit there. New York City was out of power for 3 days when Sandy hit there. Right, so no place on earth is secure in that way. So DR really means I should be up and running literally the next minute. I don't really care where your data center is. How do you provide that? So this was a challenge to Azure, not just to BizTalk team, not just to MSIT. MSIT posed the challenge, but it was a compliance requirement, right? So I don't have to go through every individual scenarios here, but what we ended up doing that was, okay, the resources that we use is SQL Azure and Azure Storage and ACS credentials. So as long as I have access to this, I can go to any data center and I'll be back in business, right? So I'll take a backup of all of your BizTalk databases, and I can go to any SQL Azure and restore it back, and I can bring up a computer instance and bring it back. So this whole scenario, we tested it multiple times, and now the least downtime that we have is close to 4 minutes. Assuming that we lose the entire data center, we can still push it back on a different one in less than 4 minutes time. So that is the DR story that we have. And now let's look at some the demo from a demo scenario. The way that I want to show this is the takeaway, if nothing else, of this an hour-long talk that I want you to walk away is the simplicity of this platform. Simplicity says that, hey, my solution is pretty complex, my problem is pretty complex, but my solution should be very, very simple. That means I have zero coding involved. I can do massive amount of B2B transactions irrespective of the scale and irrespective of the SLA. I can do this in a reliable way. That is the walkaway here. That means I don't need to worry about how do I code about this, how should I think about scale, how should I think about high availability, none of those things. So if you look at these demos, you will just literally laugh at me because I really don't have anything apart from a command line and a Windows Explorer. So I just drag and drop a file, which is similar to picking up from an SAP. It goes all the way to a partner, very similar to how what Sam showed, and the partner sends me back an acknowledgement. So there is really nothing that you will see. Where is the code behind this? There is really no code, right? So it was a three-click of a transaction, three clicks, and you configured it, and everything magically works. So that simplicity is what I want you to walk away with. And the first part, when we say it, is resilience and scale. At the beginning of this talk, I told you that we had to manage around 400-plus servers. So the resiliency was a key requirement there, saying that if something goes wrong, I need to have something else to back up. If that goes wrong, I need something else to back up. So, and if there is a weekend transaction coming, I need to be able to scale on demand. So now that whole thing is just a matter of moving a slider. I don't have to worry about whether that environment is available or this domain is available or that operations person is available. I don't have to worry about anything. I'm just moving a slider. So from a demo perspective, if you look at it, it looks so super simple, and that is the walkaway that I expect here, right? I'll show you that. And then the alerts part. Alerts, nothing fancy. It's a good old system center. So the alerts come to system center is raising an alert, right? So there is absolutely nothing new in that. So now let's just look at that. Any other questions that you may have in this regard? Good. Where is my mouse? Okay. Oh. Oh, can you please change that? All right. Okay, let me just log into a bunch of my virtual machines. All right, so I have three machines here and a whole lot of So this is a live environment where you're connected to, this is MSIT's live environment. So this is, you see BizTalk services here. So I'm connecting to one of the demo environment within that. So this is my, these are my various agreements. Come on, did I session die again? So this is similar to what you saw with what Sam was showing earlier about the EDA environment. So here I have like 11 partners and 10 agreements. So the particular scenario that we will be talking about is contest was sending to Northwind, the most two famous partners that we have. So what I will be showing you here is some of the bridges that get created when we deploy this. So here I'm going to be sending a regular 840 that will be sent from Contessa to Northwind and back. And if I go through a bridge there, it shows that I'm going to be receiving from an on-prem BizTalk environment and sending it out to a partner. So the on-prem BizTalk environment is here. My demo client is my on-prem BizTalk server. Let me show you that. So here I have a regular receive location picking up from my file, picking up from a typical file, and sending it out to a location on the cloud. So all that BizTalk server is doing is picking up from a file, posting it to Maps. Maps is going to do its job of the EDA processing, and is going to send me back an acknowledgement. And on the partner side, I'm going to receive that 840 that I sent. So let's see that. So the message that I'll be posting looks like a regular XML message. I'm going to be posting this XML message as contesto. Copy this and post this to Northwind. So the on-prem BizTalk server picked it up, sent it out, and let's make sure that we see that in the tracking. So if I go to, this is Maps portal, where it shows what is what was sent and what is tracked. So this is what, 448. Wake up. Okay. So it has sent that AS2 message and it has been routed out. So let's log in as Northwind on a different computer and see if Northwind received it. So I'm going to go to a different computer. So on a Northwind side also, I have a different BizTalk server who is just listening to this. So what Maps sent, I just have a receive location here, listening to that on as a regular HTTP post, and that writes it out back to another file. So what is that file? If we go to, Oh, which machine am I in? Yeah. So I should be receiving it here. I'll also show you one more scenario where we send a failure message and we get an alert on System Center. And I also wanted to show you about this one. So I spoke to you briefly about the tracking tool or the command line tool that MSIT built. If you look at it, it's a very simplified list of all the transactions that went through. I will request Sam to show you a much more glorified version of this, which Codit built, using the same tracking API that we spoke about. This was the intent of this one was just to take the data from, if you just go back to that command window. Yeah. If you look at it, I'm showing you that I received from BizTalk server. I did a send from BizTalk server. And then I went through multiple bridges within maps. So I'm reading tracking data from the server to the service and back. Right, so the intent of this is just to show you that you can have one common pane of window, glass, to show data from multiple sources. So we'll also look at this in a more colorful way on a portal.
So what Guru indeed was showing was that the tracking information is in two repositories. There's BizTalk on-prem and BizTalk services. So what of course our business users don't like to use is that console application. But I mean, it shows the extensibility of the platforms. The data is there. It's just a matter of applying your own dashboarding. So that's what we have done, where I just have this, let's call it business activity. And then I can say, oh, I want to show all the expense reports that have been processed by BizTalk. And I immediately get a context-sensitive view. This is what business users understand. They see the business properties. And those are the promoted properties from BizTalk or BizTalk services. That's what they see. They don't care about GUIDs. They don't care about other things. That's what they want to see. They see a status. And it happens that I have an exception here. So they can see exceptions. And outside of this demo, but you can then drill down. You can manage these exceptions. You can do the repair and resubmit and all in this, unified dashboard. So that's the approach where you take the data that Guru in this screen was just using, but you add your own dashboard layer on top of that.
So in the interest of time, what the takeaway that I want you to have here is the platform is like so super simple. So you don't have to worry about the complication of how do I do EDI or how do I scale or how should I be thinking about leveraging the cloud for my Elastic requirements, right? So you can continue to have your BizTalk server environment the way it is. And in this particular case, we just spoke about B2B was one of the scenarios. You could think about it for your EAI cases, that is just the standard service bus kind of a scenario. You receive one message, you parse it, send it out to multiple locations, a very common scenario. How do I leverage the cloud for those kind of things? So that's the walkaway that I want you to have. So there is really no programming skill that is expected. If you are an existing BizTalk user or if you have a development shop where people have a good understanding of how to build maps, how to build pipelines, you can just leverage it the way it is. And we will be publishing a very detailed white paper on Microsoft's learning of doing IT on the cloud. That white paper is expected sometime by early March or April of this year. It takes about another 4 or 5 months before we complete everything that we're doing. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just wondering, do you have a pipeline? Do you look at some other form than the normal on-premise BizTalk
administration? Do you have a short form? Yes. The question is, when you are using BizTalk services or hybrid model, do you have a different portal? Yes. BizTalk services portal, the one that we are looking at the tracking and data, probably can just switch to that demand. So it has a different portal. It has tracking information, it has administrative information. But you are right, the two are different. server admin has been there for like 8-10 years, so it's still there. The services portal is different, so the two might come together sometime in the near future. Tracking information will tell you where it failed.
So the tracking, is that available both on-premise?
Yes, it is available in both places. Same tracking is available in both places. You can promote the way that we are doing it in this particular case. When server is sending something to service, it promotes a property and sends it out as part of the HTTP header. So services will keep tracking based on that. So in the command line tool, when I'm querying, I'm just querying for based on that promoter property. So I stitch them together.
I think you have to look at it
on your system center.
I think you have to look at it from, let's say, it's correlated tracking. So you have to make sure that your ID is there. But if you would not get the status back in your flow that something fails in the cloud, you would not see it. So that's the thing you have to think about during implementation. If you send something from,
I can show you that because the way that we did that was like I have a system center that is monitoring it, right? So system center gets notification that something went wrong in the cloud. But system center is also monitoring what happened on the server. So it says things went good on server. I posted it there. But something went wrong during processing there. Maybe you sent bad data or something was wrong. But it is the same data that server sent. Right? So server did not get a positive acknowledgement. So server is waiting for that. System center can tell you this whole thing. So that is why we wanted to integrate with system center in that scenario. All right? So the reward for work well done was we just got more work. So that's the takeaway. All right. Thank you, Arshad.